This podcast is being recorded on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge their ongoing connection to lands, waters and culture. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian news and politics with a side of crispy memes. We're also the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, so if you hear us talking about memes and shit and you want to see those memes, then come join the group. Find us on Facebook. I'm Zach the Snack, and with me is my co-host,
Noon, aka I Know Funkenstein. It's nice to see you in the flesh, Zach. This is the first show that we've recorded in the same room for quite a while, and it's a huge relief.
Yeah, it's so much better to do this in person.
Yeah.
So if you have found the show lacking in energy, charisma, and chemistry, well,
hopefully this one will be slightly improved.
And if it isn't, then you know it's just us. And yeah. You should probably stop listening, and sorry for wasting your time. Let's get into it.
Cool. So this week, our entree is noted terrible person, Peter Dutton, who has basically said that he thinks that protesters should have mandatory welfare cuts, which is pretty shitty, in my opinion. He says, so this is mostly about Extinction Rebellion, who have been quite active recently. And I don't think he mentioned them specifically by name, but he talked about protesters stopping traffic, which is sort of a major Extinction Rebellion tactic, though, of course, other groups have used that tactic as well. Mm-hmm. And we have dunked on Extinction Rebellion a little bit over the last couple of weeks because they have been quite embarrassing.
Deservedly so, yeah.
But that does not mean that we agree with Peter Dutton that they should have their welfare cut, which is just a terrible fucking idea.
Yeah, that's a little bit of nuance for you.
Yeah, that's right. That's the nuance that we get.
Right in that line. We want to be able to shit on everybody in both directions.
That's what good
radical
media
centrism
reporting
is all about.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, we're fair and balanced, just like the ABC over here.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is like obviously a terrible opinion. He also said that there should be compulsory jail sentences, which, like anyone who's studied anything about legal process knows, mandatory sentencing is a really terrible idea, for all sorts of reasons. But yeah, Dutton is just being a dick and trying to play to his base by yelling about climate protesters.
Yeah, and like George Christensen also posted earlier in the week that they've actually already done this. Like, he was boasting that they'd kicked a, quote, full-time protester off the dole. I don't think that they can actually do that for that reason, but they can happen to randomly audit people that they know are protesting.
Or it could be that they, like, missed a welfare appointment because they were protesting and then lost the New Start, and it was tangentially related. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure protesting is not, like, banned in Australia yet, at least.
Yeah, but I mean, this really sits at the nexus of like so many of the coalition's obsessions. This is like anti-climate action, anti-protesting, and anti-welfare. Peter Dutton's actually like if you're talking about
completely
effectively
consistent policy,
totally. And if you're talking about effectively playing to your base, that's a fucking home run.
Yeah,
he's got the trifecta. So like, you know,
it's also pretty ridiculous because one of XR's main, and like protesters in general, one of their main tactics is getting arrested and then going to court. And like people who, most activists who think that they are committing a crime are prepared to be arrested and for that to be dealt with. So it's pretty silly to be like, well, they should be facing the full force of the law because they literally already are being charged for any crimes that they commit. And he's just like making up this new crime, which is caring about things while on welfare.
Oh, well but Pete Dutton loves crime. I mean, he likes to keep crime low, which is why he keeps inventing new crimes.
That's probably a good point. Yeah. I mean, I think maybe that tactic works better when you're in opposition, like the fucking African gangs running wild in Victoria. Like,
Jesus Christ.
That's the kind of play that you make when you're not the government. So I think you might have missed a step there. But
I don't know, like federal Liberal MPs love African gang shit as well, including Dutton. That's and true. Specifically Jason Wood, the member for La Trobe, who
but
is
just... They were all doing it to try and put a like dent Liberal in government. The Daniel Andrews sure, campaign. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as point. Soon as the election was over, suddenly it stopped being reported on every day. That's really
weird. Melburnians started flooding back out to restaurants and boosting the economy. The Liberals couldn't complain because it was good for GDP. So, on this topic, Dutton wasn't the only Liberal MP to shit on welfare recipients this week. Shocking, yeah. I know. But Social Services Minister Anne Rustin from South Australia also had some pretty cool things to say.
Yeah.
And that's how you describe it.
And in fact, her take was so bad that we're going to give her blurst take for this week.
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey.
So this take was, this is Anne Rustin, the Social Services Minister of the Federal Liberal Government, said that increasing Newstart would just be more money going into the pockets of drug dealers and criminals.
And pubs, I think.
Pubs, yeah. That's right. Which, I mean...
Well, it makes sense because that's why poor people are poor, right? Because they keep spending all their money on drugs
and
alcohol.
Addicts. Yeah, that's right. Nothing to Otherwise, do with systemic inequality or world-leading unemployment rates.
If they just stopped indulging in their vices, they could also be social services minister, presumably. Uh-huh.
And I have a hot take that's almost diametrically opposed to Anne Rustin's take, which is that increasing Newstart will go straight into the pockets of landlords and Coles and Woolies. The stats are really fucked, and the number, I don't have the exact number, but it's something like 25 to 30% of Newstart goes to rent payments.
Mm. And the percentage of Newstart recipients' income that goes to rent is much higher than that of the rest of the population. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. It's a solid like 5 to 10% higher.
Yeah, that's right. So, like, it's not that I think increasing Newstart is bad. It's clearly the only humane option to increase welfare, which has stayed the same level since 1994, which is cooked in real terms. Yep. It's just horrifying if you look at cost of living relative to Newstart, the charts are like...
There's some really upsetting graphs.
Yeah.
A lion has not upset me so much in a long time.
And so Newstart should be increased, but I think we should also all be aware that it is basically bourgeois welfare in that it all goes to... Like, it stops briefly in the bank accounts of poor people, and then moves directly into the bank accounts of wealthy property-owning people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Weird that you've now got, like, business associations calling for a rise in Newstart. Almost like they know exactly where that money's going
to
go.
Yeah, and look, we don't need to talk about this so much more. I think everyone's probably on board, but it's really obvious to all economists, but basically all economists, that if you increase the amount of money available to the people who have the least amount of money, that gets spent real quickly. Whereas, because they need to pay for doctors and food and rent and shit. Whereas if you take tax cuts for the wealthy, that money just stays in bank accounts earning interest, because those people are already spending literally all the money that they like can find things to spend it on.
Yeah, and everything that they are saving on alcohol that they would spend if they were poor is just going straight into the investment account, and then over to the Caymans, and then bada bing, bada boom, economy functional.
We briefly considered talking about interest rates on this episode, but decided that it was both boring and we didn't know enough about it. But the short version is that the economy is going badly and that the government is like trying to get anyone except themselves to do something about it. And the Reserve Bank has been like, yep, this is all we can do. Over to you, government. Why don't you spend some fucking money? And one of the ways that they could spend their fucking money is by increasing Newstart and not only helping the poor, but helping the wealthy who the poor people then give their money to.
Which is like a sad side effect, but hey, fuck it. We'll take it at this stage.
Yep.
So we'll probably move on now to a little bit of First Nations news. So we're going to give you another update from the Jabiroong saga, which is happening a little bit west of Naarm or Melbourne, where some traditional owners are defending some sacred trees and the rest of the environment around there against a highway expansion being conducted by VicRoads and specifically Major Road Projects Victoria, which is the group that's carrying this out. That's the government infrastructure body, I guess you'd say. And we've actually got a little bit of good news, which is nice. The last time that we checked in with them, things were not looking good. Cops had moved in and contractors were starting to chainsaw down trees and this kind of thing.
And there were a couple of government employees who went on racist rants and one who appeared to have a swastika tattoo. So they
were contractors like for the building or construction company. So they went directly government employees, and the one who was recorded saying racist shit was fired. That's obviously not a solution, and that's obviously like not even the fucking main issue here, but they are sending in literal like Nazis
overt racists.
And,
yeah, but this week there's some good news.
There is a little bit of good news. So a couple of senior Jabiru women have engaged in a mediation process with Major Road Projects Victoria and have come to an agreement. So where the highway was going to be realigned, they've now agreed that instead they're going to duplicate part of it in order to widen it and make it a little bit safer. And this is going to only be along a stretch of 3.5 kilometers of the proposed 12 kilometers of highway that was going to be realigned. So basically the deal is that these senior Jabiru women have said you can start construction on this quarter of the road under these strict conditions, which basically is like don't fuck up any of the like sacred stuff and don't do anything that we haven't explicitly agreed to beforehand. So this is a good development. It's good to see the government kind of coming to the table on this. But obviously this is only one step forward. There's still a long kind of battle ahead, and there's another hearing in federal court in November. So we'll hear more about the developments then. But this is movement in a positive direction, and I think proof of the strength of the of that kind of protest camp and the work that has been done by the traditional owners there.
I just kind of wanted to say from the government's point of view, I think this also takes the pressure off them a little bit to sort of keep ramming this through ultra aggressively, which has kind of been their approach up until now, or what they've been trying to do, because it means that there are like people doing work now. And so the government really, I don't think they care that much about the highway one way or the other. What they care about is getting employment stats up and showing that they're spending money on infrastructure and shit like that. I'm sure that they're not like,
well, there's the kind, it's the, like the impetus for this was the sort of safety concerns that this is one of the more dangerous stretches of highway going in and out of Melbourne. So they need to be seen to be taking action on this because a few people have died, but
sure. But I think, yeah, it's good to see an outcome that lets the government kind of get a bit of what they want while moving in a direction that seems like they're going to be putting more effort into listening and respecting Jabiru heritage.
For sure. So yeah, nice to see a little bit of positive development there. And now we've got a little...
You fucked up!
All right, who's getting matched this week, Noon?
This week, it's everyone's favorite coalition MP, Andrew Laming, or Lamming.
I literally never hear about this dude unless he's done something like excruciatingly fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, so listeners may remember he got into an enormous flame war with the Simpsons Against the Liberals Facebook page.
On the fucking taxpayer dime.
That's right, yeah. He was shitposting during office hours. And it was pretty good. I think it was 2 years ago, but there was like a good like month and a half of just wall-to-wall Andrew Laming memes, and he said a couple of really hilarious things, the most famous of which was that he just loves mashing lefties, and he also said that he was just excited to get people talking about woodchucation policy, which is just him like having a typo while saying education policy, but it was
still funny to make fun of him for it.
Still very funny.
Yeah.
And he's popped up like a couple of times since then, each time, as Zach says, being real embarrassing. But this one, he started a new Facebook page called No Pill Testing Australia. And I want to give shout outs to Paul Roberts for posting this on the group. So basically, Andrew Laming made this Facebook group called No Pill Testing Australia, which is just dedicated to getting posts from the Pill Testing Australia Facebook group and being like, this is wrong. And there's a really And he put his phone number in as well, of like, what's the phone number for this page?
And later deleted it. The idea of this, it's supposed to look like a fucking like grassroots community group being
people
like,
people who are worried about
people on the ground are worried about pill testing.
Yeah.
And it's just him in his office, presumably fucking himself doing it, because none of his assistants would be dumb enough to put the fucking contact number for the office in there.
Yeah, probably not. And so there's been some concern raised about whether or not it violates electoral law, because it doesn't have anything about like authorized by Andrew Lame in Canberra or whatever. But apparently that's only relevant during election campaigns. So maybe that will happen when the election rolls around. He'll put it on. But if not, you can better believe I'm going to be reporting him to the AEC. Anyway, so there's a good quote. Well, I don't know if it's a good quote, but a hilarious quote from him. He says, it's not no pill testing in Australia. It's saying no to pill testing Australia. I oppose the way they do pill testing. And he says he actually supports pill testing in a different format. Unclear what that is. But he has said a number of times on the No Pill Testing Facebook page that people are welcome to take drugs in the safety of their own home, just not at parties or festivals.
So he's pro like pill testing at home.
Well, it's unclear. he's pro pill taking at home.
Yeah, okay. No, I think we can affirm that Andrew, like, you've heard it here. This is the scoop on the podcast.
Yep.
Where you're hearing it first. Andrew Laming is pro eating googs in the house.
Just like a dinner, red wine, couple of pingers.
that's an aperitif.
And there's just a nice little shitpost Sunday on this, of the logo that he made.
Oh, it's so good.
Do you want to take us through it?
He's just taken the logo of Pill Testing Australia, and then in like, I don't even know if there's like a program below Paint, below MS Paint,
yeah.
But he's found it and used it to write the like sloppiest no on the logo, and he's drawn a little red circle around it as well.
To like
and
draw looks attention to it or something, yeah. But like,
and he's like, yeah, it just very much looks like somebody's kind of done it on the trackpad on their laptop. And it's just, it's very, graphic design is my passion.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Graphic design and eating pills, Andrew Lemming's
and
two
mashing
passions.
And mashing lefties.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of passions.
His weekends are big and full.
Right, all at home.
Yeah, well, that's why he gets so much done, because he's always on the, okay, allegedly. He's allegedly always on MDMA. before we get sued.
Beef with Andrew Laming, I think that would really improve our like internet cred. So maybe we can.
Yeah, I mean, listenership as always is down. So let's if any of you want to like,
we can just email this episode to him. I'm sure he will listen to
that'd
it.
Be pretty funny.
Infuriated.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's give it a shot.
We'll report back to that.
We'll bring news to you on the Laming War as it comes through.
Now we're going to move on to our main course, which is a little bit more serious than usual. Zach, what are we having for our mains?
We're going to grab a pizza at Pauline's Family Pizza Parlor, where mum and dad both get exactly half of the pizza each.
That's the last joke that we're going to make in this little segment, because it's pretty serious, and we just wanted to give a little content warning about family violence related stuff in the next couple of minutes.
Yes, so the government has announced a new inquiry into the family court system, and they have said that they're going to give Pauline Hanson the deputy chair position. So she's been quite vocal about this over the last few weeks. You've probably seen her in the news, essentially saying that fathers are getting hard done by the family court system, and that women are lying about domestic abuse in order to gain full custody of their children. That's a lie and is wrong.
Yeah. We looked up the stats, and in 97% of cases, fathers are allowed access to their children. And in 95% of those cases, it's half and half time. So
it's like extremely uncommon for fathers to be, for the court to rule that fathers aren't allowed to see their children.
Yep.
So most of the sort of, you know, discourse about this has been about what a kind of cynical political play it is by the coalition. They need Pauline's vote, and they're trying to get her on side. She's been mouthing off about this in the press. So they figure, hey, we'll throw her a bone. This will keep her happy, and hopefully that she'll vote with us on everything that we want her to. Which is a good point. But there was a piece in The Guardian by Jess Hill, who is kind of an expert on this subject, which I think really cuts to something more relevant, I guess, about this issue, which is that we have had, and this has been noted, that there's already been a number of inquiries into the family law system in Australia. Several recommendations have been made as recently as like 2 years ago. But this further inquiry is pointless, right?
It's just going over old ground that's been covered several times over the last decades, and that the recommendations keep basically being ignored. So we know what we need to do, no one's doing it, and that this inquiry is just like kicking the can further down the road for political gain.
Absolutely, except that's not all that it represents.
Yes, that's true.
And which is kind of the point of Jess Hill's article. Her point is that it's not just procrastination, it's actually actively dangerous, because they're putting somebody who has already come out and said that the reason that she wants to hold this inquiry is she thinks that women are lying. And
specifically, she's upset that her son was involved in family court hearing related stuff, which we kind of looked up and couldn't find a huge amount of detail about. But he pled guilty to violating a domestic violence order, and Pauline used her parliamentary privilege, which is to say that you can't get sued for anything you say in parliament, to basically call his ex-wife a liar and say that he got screwed by the courts.
Yeah, and look, I don't think that having a personal motivation for doing something political is inherently bad.
True.
I would never say that somebody who had experienced domestic violence and then became a campaigner, someone like Rosie Batty, is like, oh, they're too close to the issue, whatever.
Totally.
That's fucking ridiculous. But on the other hand, if you are a politician who is trying to get revenge for your child by flagrantly lying and maligning some of the most marginalized people in our society, that hits a little different. So, basically, the history behind this is that up until the mid-90s, the priority for the family law court, for the family courts rather, and the Family Law Act, which is the, you know, the laws that they enact, was to prioritize the safety of the children. That was what they did.
Seems like a pretty good purpose of those institutions.
Sounds like it's what they were set up to do, right? Pretty cool. Then in the mid-90s, some new research came out basically suggesting that kids not having access to their dads was, like, really harmful. And this research was later proven to be completely wrong, basically. But after some lobbying by fathers' rights groups, I'm doing some little scare quotes for you there, the Keating government actually wrote into the Family Law Act that children have access to both parents and that parents have equal responsibility for their kids. So the way that the family courts started to treat domestic violence cases was different. Suddenly they started to emphasize time and access to the father over necessarily kids being safe from an abusive parent.
And there are some really horrifying examples of this.
Look, I don't really want to go into them because they're, like, really, really horrible, but we're talking about fathers who have, like, sexually abused children being and those kids then being ordered to spend time with him without their mother, and times when kids have been ordered back into their father's custody and then abused even further because fucking obviously.
Yeah.
So that started kind of in the mid-90s, but then it started to really ramp up in the mid-thousands under the Howard government after even further lobbying by fathers' rights groups. And they had something called the Shared Parental Responsibility Act, introduced changes basically making it easier for fathers to get access granted to their kids. And so that's where those stats that we were talking about just before start to come into play, where it's like in 3% of cases only are fathers denied access to their children. So this is not an issue. What Pauline is talking about is not an issue. Fathers are not being told that they can't see their children.
Even in cases where they almost certainly should be told that they can't see their children, they are still getting access.
Yes, and kids are actually being put in danger consistently by these courts because they are prioritizing the rights of the fathers to see their children over the rights of kids to be safe from abusive parents. And that's what is going on. So these last two reviews, there was an inquiry and a report, I think, over the last like 10 years or so. And both of them have said, this is fucked. You need to stop putting kids back into the custody of abusive parents. Seems pretty obvious, right? So that's the advice that the government has gotten multiple times. They've refused to act on it. And now they say we're going to have another inquiry, and it's being headed up by, or headed up in part by, a person who is specifically contradicting all of the professional advice and the science behind these reports.
I think there's also been some reports that some domestic violence groups and women's rights groups are reluctant or refusing to come and give evidence before the inquiry headed by Pauline, which I can totally understand, and I'm not saying they should or shouldn't do that, but that is likely to then further give capacity for Pauline to skew the recommendations because those people aren't there giving evidence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the whole thing is designed to give the government different outcomes than the last two inquiries. Is that right? That's the
absolutely.
Conclusion
that
this Jess
is
Hill
this is
making?
This yeah. This is going to be a platform for men's rights activists to come and air their grievances and basically say that men are being hard done by this system, and they need to be given more rights, which they like. The idea of developing a fucking victim complex about something that isn't happening is just, I can't even wrap my head around it. But this is a depressingly kind of society-wide attitude. I think that there was a study, let me see what year it was. A national survey from 2017 found that 43% of Australians agree that mothers, quote, often make up or exaggerate claims of domestic abuse in order to improve their case. So this is a widespread belief. It's completely wrong. And one of the really fucked up side effects of these, of the Shared Responsibility Act, is that mothers alleging domestic abuse can now be seen as evidence of bad parenting and can actually work against those mothers in the family court system.
So horrifying. Yeah, what the hell?
And there's been cases where mothers have been found to have absolutely no other negative impacts on their children other than the fact that they've said that their father their partner has abused them, and the family court has taken that as evidence of, oh, you're not actually not suitable, you're not a suitable parent, and we're going to give the father custody of the kids.
That's so horrifying. What the hell?
It's absolutely it's so fucked, and this is something that it's like it just urgently needs to be fixed.
Yeah,
and so,
and that we've known what changes need to happen ever since we like undid them in 96.
Yeah. So two more things that I want to say before we wrap
sure.
this up. I said that, 43% of Australians think that women lie about domestic abuse in order to get custody of the children. A Canadian study, from a couple of years ago found that in fact, fathers are like three times more likely to lie about domestic abuse than mothers in order to, sway a custody decision in their favor. Are you shocked? Probably not. That's how this all goes. And so I guess the final point, and to bring it back to the direction that we're heading in, this isn't just like a lazy, cynical political move by the government. This is another actively harmful, sexist, patriarchal piece of policy that they're going to try and introduce. So like, this is troubling and we should be worried about it. It's not just like, oh, geez, what a waste of time. This is bad and dangerous.
I've got two small things. One's related to that, which is about Anthony Albanese and the Labor Party, who have basically said something along the lines of they can't support this inquiry because Pauline is going to be given the deputy chair position. And as you just said, that is completely missing the point that this isn't just a cynical political maneuver. This is a active step in a direction of a government wanting to make life worse for women who are experiencing domestic violence and to enable perpetrators of the domestic violence. And that the Labor Party has just sort of like fallen right into the trap of being like, oh, the problem here is Pauline and her bias. And like, yeah, that's a problem. But that the Labor Party have just like showing once again that they're completely incapable of responding to the government's shittiness on any kind of like serious level.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing to think that those are the people whose job it is to like be stop the opposition. This horrible shit going through.
Yeah. The other thing I just wanted to say was a statistic that Pauline has been throwing around, which is that when people are like, a woman is murdered each week by a current or former partner, which is true and a disturbing statistic that we as a country are completely ignoring. But she says in response, yes, but 21 men kill themselves each week because of being found against in the family court. And
but this is a classic MRA line, by the way.
If that's right.
You know, have followed kind of feminist discourse at all over the last few years, you'll know that this is a line trotted out again and again.
Yeah, that men kill themselves at higher rates than women. And that is true, and it's a problem that we should be trying to deal with. But it is there's literally no evidence at all linking it to the family courts. And it's a disgusting piece of whataboutism from Pauline to distract from her shitty positions that are going to hurt people and instead make it about what about the poor men, which it's...
She couldn't just stick to the fucking racism. She really had to like, she there's just, there's literally no dog shit position that she won't adopt for political gain.
Yep.
Or in this case, potentially personal gain, which is, pretty sick. Pretty cool that she's a person that is a major political force in this country. To sum up, go and read that piece by Jess Hill on The Guardian. It's called Family Law Inquiry is No Sop to Hanson. It's a deliberate move to bury previous reviews. Now it's time to move on to something a little bit less serious.
Shitpost of the week.
So this week's shitpost is a tweet from Ben Eltham, and we want to give a shout-out to Greg Potter, who's a long-time stalwart of Ozpol shitposting, for sharing this into the group. Thanks, Greg, for your shitpost assist of the week. And so this tweet is from Ben Eltham, who says, "Celebrity chefs, I made a molecular tomato foam using a mass spectrometer and a blowtorch at 76 degrees for 17 hours. Also, celebrity chefs, paying my workers is way too complex."
Well, no, I mean, it is.
It is.
It's so hard. Very difficult. It's really hard to pay people. Is it, should I pay them the legal amount or should I pay them less?
Less than that.
That's a tough and complicated decision.
This is something that we mentioned, I think, maybe way back in our first episode or very early on, but it's sort of been an ongoing saga about celebrity chefs and like regular chefs criminally underpaying their staff.
Yeah,
and
we had George Columbaris come in and cook
make
us up
a contrite
treat.
Yeah. Meal. Yeah. But this week, a bunch of chefs and like the head of the Australian Hospitality Association, or whatever they're called, coming out.
A collection of real straight shooters.
That's right. Who have no vested interest in this whatsoever. They just want what's best for the industry.
And GDP.
Coming out and being like, you know, I think there's a groundswell for an amnesty on wage theft.
When I'm out in the streets, you know, all I'm hearing from people is, I really wish they would go easier on those celebrity chefs.
Yeah, yeah. And there was this great interview with John Fain earlier in this week, who this guy from the Hospitality Association was like, you know, actually, George Columbaris reported himself to Fair Work. He found out about it and he was upset and he took himself to Fair Work. And John was like, you mean after his employees joined the union and got the union to start threatening to take it to the media? And the guy's like, yeah, but that doesn't mean we need it to be covered in the media. The threat of being covered is completely different from actual media attention. And John Fain was flustered in a way that I've never heard before. He just went, excuse me? Excuse me? Which is like, that's a pretty big fuck up from a like 30-year radio veteran to get such a bald-faced piece of bullshit from the person he's interviewing.
He's losing his touch.
He's retiring next week. I'm sad, but Zach isn't.
I could give less of a fuck about literally any ABC presenter. Not sorry.
Yeah, anyway, wage theft, it's bad. Barry Cafe, which is the site of protests late last year, I think, have now been, I think they're taken to court by three of their employees, and maybe also Chin Chin and some other places are being taken to court the union. We want to give a shout out to United Voice and also their campaign called Fair Plate, which you can go and check if their restaurants and cafes that you're eating at are paying their staff properly. Hint, they're probably not. And yeah, I mean, it is the celebrity chefs who are getting done first and foremost, but I think there's more and more investigations going on into other workplaces that...
Yep. It's obviously widespread, but like it makes for better news when it's you know, a known figure that's getting accused of this stuff. And I did just want to touch on one funny element of this story. So the piece that kind of brought this whole amnesty narrative out into the public view was something published in the Sunday Age, and they basically interviewed a bunch of restaurateurs about you know, the underpayment scandal. And one of the people they interviewed was a guy called Chris Lucas, who runs a fancy restaurant called Chin Chin in Melbourne. I think there's one in Sydney. I obviously have never been there. he was one of these people basically talking about, oh, it's way too complex for us to, or like employment law is really complicated and it's hard for us to know what the right thing to do is and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, some other journalists at The Age had been putting together a story about Chris Lucas, owner of Chin Chin, underpaying his staff over $300,000.
Hilarious.
So they, within days of each other, these pieces were published, basically one where The Age was helping chefs defend themselves and the other where they were incriminating them. So, you know, while these sort of celebrity-focused stories, as you say, are kind of more prominent, this is an industry-wide problem, and I think anybody who's ever worked in hospitality has been underpaid at one point.
I have heard that there is a cartel amongst cafe owners in Brunswick to refuse to pay their staff above $18 an hour, though that's probably gone up very slightly in the like couple of years since I've been working
18
there.
18 sounds like, I mean, when I was working at the pizza spot, I was making 15.
Yeah, that's right.
And before that, when I was delivering, I was making 12.
And there's like practically zero chance of any of these places that you or I worked at getting looked at, let alone prosecuted.
Absolutely. And the way that especially, you know, I think it's harder in those smaller businesses to speak up because probably, you know, your employment is less secure there.
Definitely.
And also there's that whole family business attitude of like, oh, we're a team. And like, you know, you actually have a whole bunch of intimate individual contact with these people. You work with them every day. Whereas like none of these people, you've never seen George. He's too busy yelling at his real estate agent on the phone on the set of MasterChef.
I got a little bit of an inside tip on George Colombaris while I was up in Sydney. Someone told me that he used to work for a friend of George Colombaris is at a restaurant, and George would come in and sit down and order, and like a minute later would start hassling the staff because it hadn't come quickly enough. And he would also bite all of their ideas for menu items and then take it back to his restaurant, and he would never tip. So anyway, that's just like a nice trifecta of George Colombaris being a giant asshole.
Now that's news.
That is, that's fresh inside
hot
information from the snack pod.
Look, we could go on about this, but we have, and we should stop.
Okay.
Because it's time to end this podcast, which has gone too long. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much to all of our patrons for supporting us. It means a huge amount. We bought some more gear with your money, and we're going to post up a little video of Noon unboxing that for you to have a look at so you can see where your cash is going.
We're also going to be doing a bonus episode next week, and if you donate $1 a month to our Patreon, you can get access to it, and for slightly more than that, you can ask us questions about stuff that you'd like us to answer on the bonus episodes. Bonus episode's going to be a bit looser, a bit less newsy, a bit more shitpost-oriented, and a bit more about the Ozpol Shitposting Facebook group. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, hop on Patreon, give us a buck, and get all that bonus content.
Yes, one US dollar.
Yes,
month.
That's right. Yeah.
If you want to support us, that would be amazing. If you don't want to support us or you can't support us on Patreon, a really great way that you can support us is to review us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. We have one little review here last week that we're going to read out to you. This is by from someone called Woe Davey.
thanks, Dave, who I'm pretty sure is an old workmate of mine, at a place where we were actually not criminally underpaid. So that's nice. Yeah. So his title for it was Crispy News and Memes, 5 stars. And he says, yes, please.
Short, sharp, succinct, everything that this podcast is not.
Thanks, Dave.
We appreciate it, man. That's really cool. Thank you so much for tuning in. That's about it. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.